Hi, my name is Tony. I am a shy and introverted kid, and I created this podcast with some help and encouragement from my dad. The goal is for me to break out of my shell and become more comfortable with people. Being someone who never stops talking like my stepsister isn't the best either, but I plan to get somewhere in the middle. It's important to be a good listener, but also to be heard when you have something to say. Hi, my name is Tony, and welcome to the second episode of my podcast. Today I have a very special guest, and his name is Bill Jones.
Hey Tony, thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining me. Where were you born, and what was your best childhood memory?
Well Tony, I was born in England, in Ormskirk, which is just outside Liverpool, northern England, just not far from where the Beatles came together. They all talk funny over there, they talk through the noses like this. But I got out of that real quick because when I was growing up, the kids in school, we came to Canada in 1957. I was born in 1952, a lot of years ago. So when we came over to Canada in 1957, I started school. I was different than all the other kids. All the other kids spoke Canadian English, and I spoke English. And so because of that, I was the odd one out. So I had to learn to be like the rest of the kids. And so I did. I changed my accent from talking down my nose and having a very, very thick accent to talking like a Canadian, like I do now. And a lot of British people I meet, well, how come you don't have an accent? Well, because I learned not to have an accent in school. So that's my upbringing was about 5 years in England. And then the rest of the time has been in Edmonton. It was 24 months we lived in Edmonton, and then we moved to Calgary, and we moved around to Calgary. My parents liked to move. They moved every 2 years. So I was always the new kid at school. You know what that's like?
Yeah.
It's not the easiest thing, and of course, you always got to make new friends, and so that's always a little more difficult.
Later in your life, what were the jobs that you had?
Wow, I guess I started working at about 16. I got my social insurance number back then, and I started out as a dishwasher. And then I gradually worked in restaurants until I was able to work in a little more in the kitchen, and I actually worked as a short order cook. Then I learned the front end of the restaurants, and I worked as a waiter. And then, actually before that, I was a busboy, and then I worked as a waiter. And then I ended up working in a place called Wapta Lodge out in the mountains, and I was working as a chef out there. Then after that, I decided that working 24 hours a day with no breaks wasn't really that much fun. So I decided to take some time off, and I took about 6 months off and hitchhiked around Alberta. And then after that, I got a job with Prudential Insurance. Now, I saw an ad in the paper. I was looking for a job. I saw an ad in the paper, and it said, looking for insurance agents. Well, I'd never been an insurance agent. I didn't even know what an insurance agent did, but it sounded like a good job. So I went in there, and I talked to the president of this insurance company, of the brokerage, and I convinced him that I'd be a good man for the job, given the right training. And so he said he'd give me a try. So I spent about a week in the office learning the ins and outs, and then I had to take a course. So I took the books home, and I studied, and I took the course, and I wrote the provincial exam for insurance, and I became an insurance agent at the ripe old age of 18. And now I went around from door to door, knocking on doors, trying to sell people insurance. And then finally, I built some customers up, and I would go around and I collect insurance. They called it a debit back then. You had a specific area, and you'd go on past customers, knock on their door, and get their money for their insurance payments. And then you would try to sell them stuff. And I remember back then, do you know what an RSP is?
No.
It's called a Registered Retirement Savings Plan. And that's where you put your money until you're old. And because you put your money there, you get tax savings, so you don't have to pay the government as much tax. And then when you get old, you get to take it out at a lower tax rate and you save some money. Well, at 18, I knew the words, but I didn't know the meaning. And I would go in and I would talk to people and say, okay, well, you need to set up your RSP. Have you got one now? No, we don't have one. Well, here's the reasons you need to have it. And I remember one fellow looking at me and saying, what do you know about life, kid? And I looked at him. I said, well, you know, sir, really not very much. But I do know RSPs are a good thing because that's what I've been taught. And I went through and I sold him an RSP. And I realized at that point in my life that I could probably sell anything if I believed in it. And that started my way on into a career of sales. But that got interrupted, of course, because after selling shoes for a while, I got bored with that. And I decided to become a cab driver. And I went and drove cabs for the Yellow Cab Company. And I thought, this is pretty sweet. I like this. And then I decided to buy a taxi. So I bought a taxi. And I would work the night shift because I really liked that. The people were cool. They'd get in the car and they'd be partying and they'd get out. And this was a cool thing to do. So then I decided, well, this is so good. I have another guy working the day shift. My car is making me money all day long, 24 hours a day. I'm going to buy another car. So I bought a second cab. And I got two guys running that. And I was still working the night shift. Well, this went on and it went pretty good until I got sick and ended up in hospital. And nobody was working the cars because they didn't have to show up for work. And I was going broke real quick. So then I met my wife and we decided that we'd get married. So we got engaged and we got married, and I decided that this was not the job for a married man, because first of all, I'd be working nights and I wouldn't be spending them with her. And that was a better thing to do. And so I quit cabs and I decided to be working in the finance industry. And I worked for a company called TransCanada Credit. I know that's not on their sheet. I worked for a company called TransCanada Credit, and they had me call a guy to get payment from him, and they knew nobody had managed to get this guy to make payments on his loan ever. So I called him up, and I asked him if I could come over and see him, and I went over and see him. I took him a coffee, and I didn't know this guy from Adam. And I said, you know, we've got a problem because your loan is past due. And I'm going to get real trouble if I don't get some kind of a payment. And he said, well, sure, how much do you need? I said, well, $50 would be great. So he said, sure, yeah, here you go, Bill. No problem. I said, I'll see you in about 3 months. I said, I know your payments are every month, but I'll probably see you in 3 months just to say hi. He said, no problem. So I went back to the office, and they were about to write this account off. But if he hadn't have made the payment, they would have written the account off, and he would never have to pay. But because he made a $50 payment, he's back on the books, and now he has to pay again. And I would visit him every 3 months and get another payment from him and take him a coffee. And am I going too long?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, you let me know if I'm going too long, okay. Anyway, I worked with the finance industry for quite a while. They made me assistant manager. Then they were about to make me branch manager. And I said to my wife, I said, you know, I really would rather work for myself. So we looked at buying a hardware store, and we found one to buy. And my wife had been working for an oil company, and I'd been working for the finance company. We'd be saving our money up. And so we decided to buy this hardware store. And I remember my boss had said to me, Bill, why hardware? And I didn't have a good answer. But I said to him, well, the only answer I've got for you is because I don't know anything about hot dogs. And so I'm going into hardware. So I left my job there and started the hardware store the next day. I've never been out of work for more than 24 hours.
What was the name of the hardware store?
It was called Marshall Wells initially. And then when we bought it, we made it Marshall Wells Jones Hardware Limited. Then after 3 or 4 years, a company called Home Hardware came out from Eastern Canada. They were offering lower prices on the product and higher margins for the seller. So I could sell my product for less to my customers and make more money myself. This was a given. But you had to buy shares in the company to do that. So I quit with Marshall Wells. I changed the banner over to Home Hardware, Jones Home Hardware. We had that business for about 10 years. It did really well. The landlord, though, unfortunately raised our rent 3 times. I tried to negotiate with him, and he didn't want to negotiate. It was his way or the highway, so I chose the highway and sold our inventory off and closed the doors. And the next day, I was working for Ben Moss Jewelers, And then I worked for them for about a week because that wasn't me. I'm not very glitzy, as you could tell. And so I applied to a company called Heath Zenith Electronics. Let me just go back a bit. In 79, I bought my first computer. And it was the very first Radio Shack color computer that hit Calgary. And I got the very first one off the run. And I learned to program, and I learned what the hardware did. I even created my own modification that allowed me to flip a switch and turn the bright white letters to, no, the bright green letters to bright to black letters on a white background. And so I could flip back and forth between the colors so it wasn't as hard on the eyes. And I was talking to a company down in the States prior to me doing this and asking them, because they made mods for the color computer, and they said, no, we don't have anything that does that, but let us know if you find anything. So I had done the circuit up. I'd done it together with just wires and solder, and I put a switch on, and it worked, and I phoned them up and said, hey, I figured it out. I did it. How do you do it? Well, I'll send you the chart. I'll send you the graph. So I designed it, sent it down to them, and they started making it and making lots and lots of money. So that brings me up to where I moved into Zenith. When I worked for Heathkit Zenith, they were a kit company, made computers and audio equipment and TVs and robots and all kinds of things in kit form. And then we'd sell them to the customer in kit form, and they would have to put them together. And that was part of the fun back then. Now people don't want to put anything together. But that was part of the fun back then. And but we had those people that came in and wanted the item and didn't want to put it together. Well, I would offer my services for $50, and I would get to put this thing together. It was really cool, and get paid $50 to do it. So I was having a blast. I also realized when I was with Heath Zenith Electronics that one of the things I was supposed to do was sell electronics courses to Mount Royal College and Medicine Hat College. But honestly, I didn't have the education for that. So for me to have the education for that, I needed to look at the courses that we had, and I had to know those courses. So I approached Zenith and said, look, I want to take all these courses, and I want you to sponsor me to do that. And they said, well, we can't do that. Sorry, you just have to sell them. And so I thought, well, I can't sell them unless I'm into them and I understand them. So I would take a textbook home every night and study. And I took my AC/DC, my semiconductor, digital electronics, and I took every one of the courses they had myself. And then I started selling to Mount Royal College and Medicine Hat College. And that's where I got my background in electronics. Self-taught, again. I learned more outside of school than I did inside of school. Wasn't that I wasn't capable inside of school. It's that I enjoyed it outside of school. I was self-driven that way. And so then while I was at Zenith Electronics, I came down. I should sidestep and say I'm a magician. And I started doing magic when I was 18. I started doing paid shows probably when I was 20, something like that. And so that was when I became semi-professional. I worked with a rabbit, and I got a bacteria, and it's called tularemia. It's carried by a lot of rodents, but rarely by rabbits. And I got this bacteria, and it killed my liver. So, now back to where we were with Zenith. I got very sick while I was with Zenith, and my liver failed. And I had to go away and get a liver transplant. So when I came back, they had hired somebody to do what I was doing, but they kept my position open for me, and I went back. While I had been there before I got sick, we went from losing money to the most improved store in Canada in sales. And all I did, very simply, was take their old account records and phone the people. Hey, you were buying from us before. Would you like to buy from us again? And they would say, sure, we would. But nobody ever called us. And so we became the most improved store in Canada, and we were being applauded by all the upper up guys. And so when I came back, they were back in the same position because the new guy hadn't called any of them again. So I had to start all over again. And then I saw an ad. They told me that actually when I got back after being sick, they told me that they were thinking of closing the store down because it just wasn't making any money. Well, of course not, because nobody was phoning anybody. And so then I saw an ad for a company called Wise Computer Solutions. And I applied for that. They were looking for a manager. And I applied for that and got the job. I could keep on going for a couple of more hours on my jobs. I usually hold a job for about 10 years, and then it's time to move on. And my last job was as a realtor. I held that for 10 years. In fact, I got my 10-year certificate 6 months prior to me resigning and retiring.
What got you interested in magic?
Wow. I was interested as a youngster, like from 8 years old, but could never understand the books. And the library has a great selection of books on magic. I could never understand the books. But when I was about 18, I was watching cable TV, and we only had two stations and a cable station at that time. There was a guy on there called, his name was Napoleon LeBlanc. I later got to know him as Nap. Was on TV doing a local cable show doing magic, and he had cups and balls, and he had three cups and three balls, and the balls would jump from one cup to the other cup to the other cup. They would all be under one cup, then they all be under a different cup. Then he would stack the cups and put the balls on top, and they would end up in the bottom cup. But and I was just amazed. This is so cool. And he was using coffee cups. It's like, how is this guy doing this? And at the end of the trick, he lifted up the bottom cup, and there was an egg. And he opened the egg, and there was a chick. It wasn't even a yolk. It was a chick. And I thought, oh, this is great. Well, back then, you could phone in. We didn't have virtual things where you could tweet them. You pick up the phone and you phone him right after the show and he'd talk to you. So I got on the phone with Nap and I said, well, you know, I know some parlor tricks. Like I know how to make a coin disappear up my sleeve. And I know how to do a simple card trick. And I'd really be interested in joining this Calgary Magic Circle you talked about. He said, well, Bill, he said, the best thing I can do for you is have you introduce you to Dr. Jack Peters. Dr. Jack is one of the premier magicians in Calgary, and he is also a chiropractor, and he's also the president of the Calgary Magic Circle. And I said, great, okay, well, where do I meet him? He said, I'll set up the appointment for you, but you have to learn five magic tricks before you go down there. I said, well, how do I do that? He said, go to the library, get a book. So, okay, I did that. So I went to the library, and I got a book, and I learned some magic, and I invented my own rope trick. And I thought, I'm ready for this. So then I went for my appointment with Dr. Jack, and I sat in his waiting room with all these patients. I mean, they were all needing chiropractic care. They're all, you know, sore backs and sore legs and sore necks, and some of them had sore faces. I saw them, wow. But anyway, so my turn came and I was called in and I thought, well, what, I'm going to lay on a table and do a magic trick? Or anyway, I went in, big plush office, and he said, oh, Jones, yeah, you want to be a magician? I said, well, yeah. He said, well, show me what you got. So my knees are knocking really, really loudly. I could hear them. And I did as best I could with magic. And I did my own magic, and he was quite impressed with my rope trick. In fact, he started using it. So I got from there, he introduced me to the Calgary Magic Circle. I went to their first meeting, and guess what I had to do? An audition. So now I'm stood in front of about 10 or 15 magicians, most of them seniors. When I say seniors, they're probably my age that I am now, but I was much younger. So I did magic, and again my knees are knocking, my lips are trembling, and I'm almost in tears. I'm so scared. And I pulled it off, and I became a member of the Calgary Magic Circle. Got introduced to Mickey Hades, who had the magic shop in town, and the rest is history.
Who is your favorite magician?
My favorite local magician or international magician?
International.
I think right now, the person that comes to mind is probably Murray Hatfield. Now, Murray was local, but he has performed all over the world. He now lives in Victoria, B.C., with his wife, who was his assistant, who still works as his assistant, and now their new little arrival, their little boy. He was just a little guy. When I was 18, playing tennis up against the wall with my girlfriend, now my wife, playing tennis up against the school wall. He came riding his bike through and said, "Hello, Mr. Jones." And that was Murray Hatfield back then. And Murray Hatfield has grown to be an astounding international magician. Does a tour across Canada every year and does a real good job.
What advice do you have for magicians that have just started doing magic?
Practice. I used to practice 2 hours every night in front of the mirror, and I'd watch myself make mistakes. And then take somebody in your confidence, mom, dad, somebody like that that is going to support you, and show them you do it, and have them be honest with you. If they see what you did, have them tell you. Then practice again until you get it right. And practice and practice. There's a thing called a French drop. Now, a French drop is when you hold a coin or ring or whatever in one hand, and you take it, you hold it up here, and you wiggle your fingers, and it vanishes from your hand. And that's pretty cool. But that took probably 2 years every night for 2 hours before I figured it out. Because you got to learn to keep the full hand closed, or the empty hand closed, and the full hand open. And that's hard to do because your mind doesn't work that way. But as soon as you can do that, it's believable, even though the person you've just explained it to knows that that's not where it's going to be. They still look. So it's practice, 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 practice. When you think it's perfect, practice some more because it's not. When it becomes muscle memory, like doing a French drop, if I don't do a French drop for the next 5 years, I'll be able to pick up a coin and do a French drop because it's muscle memory. It's I don't have to think about it. It just happens, like breathing. Any magic I do now, and I don't perform on stage anymore because of all the surgeries and medications I'm on, my hands shake a bit. And I never wanted to be that old magician that everybody feels sorry for. So now I don't do much magic, but I do teach magic.
When you were a realtor, how many houses have you sold, and what was your favorite?
Oh, wow, that's a tough call. I mean, I would probably average about 36 houses, or we call them ends, either buying or selling, right? Probably 36 ends a year on average. In my last year, I pulled my website and all my advertising off 2 years ago, anticipating winding down so I could retire. And even last year I did 6 ends just because, you get your friends start to refer you, and things like that. So, my favorite house that I sold would probably have been a $1.2 million home in Hawkwood. Beautiful house, bungalow style, back walkout, basement. Went very smoothly. It was just a very nice home. The worst house I've ever sold was a 1901 two-story house in Ramsey. Had all the insulation torn out of it and all the drywall torn out of it. The upstairs was in the same condition. The stairs were treacherous to walk up, because they creaked so bad, I was sure it was going to fall through. When you upstairs, the attic had a drop-down ladder, like the old rooms did. When it was up, it looked like part of the ceiling. But this one was so decrepit that there was a wooden spoon perched on the top of a door frame holding this thing up over your head. So if that ever slipped, it'd come down and knock you cold. And I sold that house in about 6 weeks. The fellow was very happy. I got more than he was asking for it. But it was one of those houses that says, come fix me up and I'll be wonderful. And it's really hard to find inner city homes for a reasonable price. And I think that house at the time, which was a few years ago now, sold for about $275,000. And when he bought it, he probably paid $30,000 for it. So he was quite happy.
Do you have any other hobbies?
Wow, yeah, too many. I have more interest than one person should really have. I took up metal detecting in 1978. I bought my first metal detector, and I went out in the schoolyard and found a lot of bobby pins and safety pins and nails, tin foil, bottle caps, pull tabs, and that's about all I found. But I realized then there's a lot of stuff under the ground, and I kept it up, and I found pennies and quarters and dimes, and then I started finding older things. And my dream was always to find a cache of coins. Somebody's hidden a whole bunch of coins. Well, 1978 to now is how many years? I don't know. A whole lot, 30 some odd. And last year, I found a cache of coins. 1,660 coins under, split up between two spruce trees in Bridgeland, of all places. So I was pretty thrilled with that. It took a long time. People say, oh, yeah, you know, you read this in the magazines that people find a cache of coins. Oh, that can't happen here. It happens here. It is possible. I did it. I've also found a lot of old things. I've found a lot of old junk, of course. But I found old coins, 1906 large cent in Calgary, a 1916 large cent. I found a 1875 to 1925 Stampede pendant in Ramsey, 6 inches down in the ground this year, or 2014. It was the 50th anniversary of the Northwest Mounted Police coming to Calgary. So I found that this year as well.
How does metal detecting work?
Well, metal detectors, there's a couple of different kinds. There's pulse induction. We used to call them beat frequency oscillation, and RF, radio frequency. What I use is usually the RF, and the frequency I use is currently about 5 kilohertz. And it sends down a, it's got a coil. So if you imagine a round coil, and it sends out a bell-shaped wave that goes from one edge of the coil to the opposite edge of the coil. If that goes along and is interrupted by a piece of metal, it makes the tone of the metal detector go from right? Okay, so that gives you a general idea. It's a little more complex than that. My detector that I use now is called a Garrett AT Pro. The AT Pro has several different ways in the electronics of figuring out what things are. And it can tell me whether it's a quarter, a dime, a penny. It can tell me if it's silver or it's gold. It can tell me if it's platinum. So I work with a group called the Ring Finders. And we get called and we go out and look for people's rings when they've lost them. And that happens a lot in the winter. And I found platinum rings. Last year, I returned over 20 rings to people. So that's basically how it works, is by interrupting a radio signal of some sort. The beep frequency or pulse induction send out beep, 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 beep. And then when it gets close to the item, it's beep, 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 beep. Okay? It's kind of hard to say on a mic opposed to drawing a picture, but...
Do metal detectors only detect metal?
Yes. Only detect metal. I've had people say they've lost the diamond out of their rings. Can you come out and find it? I said, only if I see it.
Why did you start metal detecting?
I saw an advertisement, and of course they have... if you've ever seen an advertisement for a metal detector, they still do it today. They show you a guy holding a metal detector and piles of jewels and gold and stuff around him. And this was captures your imagination. I can find piles of jewels and gold? Not likely. But what you can find is you can find silver coins. And the average silver coin now, Canadian silver coin, that's pre-1967, some 1968s, but pre-1967 are 80% silver. And they're selling for 16 times their face value. So a dime is worth about $1.60. That's not a bad return. I turned in this year, just in, I call it clad, okay? That's current money that's not worth anything more than the face value. And I got over $100 worth this year that I dug up. That's a lot of deep knee bends. We still dig a lot of pennies.
Bill, it was a pleasure having you on the show, and it was very interesting learning about you.
Well, thanks very much. It's been a pleasure being here, and nice seeing you again, Tony. We haven't seen each other for quite a few years, but it's been a pleasure to talking to you again. Hope we get to do this some other time. I'm sure I got lots more stories back there somewhere. Just give me a shout anytime.
Folks, thank you for joining us, and I look forward to having you on my next episode in 2 weeks.